The following podcast is brought to you by The Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Thank you all for coming out on this cold, wintry evening. I wanted to talk this evening about a koan that I had a very powerful emotional experience with. And from the get-go, it doesn't seem like much, this koan. But I'd like to speak about it and kind of unpack it and maybe also then kind of give a little insight on how koans can change our lives. How koans and this practice can change our lives. This koan, I really feel like changed my life. So here's the case. A monk asked Koshan, "How is it when the mourning clothes are not worn?" And that's M-O-U-R-N, mourning. How is it when the mourning clothes are not worn? Kaoshan said, "Today Kaoshan's filial duty is fulfilled." The monk asked, "How about after fulfillment of filial duty?" Kaoshan said, "Kaoshan likes to get falling down drunk." So that was kind of my first reaction too, that I kind of laughed at it, and I thought it was funny. Maybe it was one of these more humorous kind of joke koans. But so let's take a look at this. So how is it when the mourning clothes are not worn? You know, there's so many different questions that we see in the koan books of monks asking teachers certain questions, and many of them that we see over and over again are, what is Buddha? Why did the bearded fellow come from the West? Or why did Bodhidharma come from the West? And other questions about maybe attaining enlightenment. But this monk asks a very unique question. How is it when the mourning clothes are not worn? So in writing this talk, I thought of a couple different experiences that I've had with mourning. The most recent was a close friend of mine who I met in college, whose name is on the altar right now. He passed away just a little less than a month ago. His name was Tony, and it was a very unexpected death. Still not quite sure what happened to him, but you know, I heard the news during a set break of a show that I was playing, and it kind of hit me like a brick wall. And, you know, it was very, I was very grief-stricken by this, the passing of this friend of mine. And I was lucky that I had a time in my schedule that I could drive up. His funeral was up very close to Albany, New York, so I had something to do that night, but I was able to leave that morning and go up there. And, you know, I saw his family, and I saw his wife, and I saw his three kids. And it was a very solemn occasion, and they kept it very quiet. A lot of people didn't come, just his really close, his friends and his family. And so I thought about these mourning clothes that everybody there was wearing, and that I continued to wear. You know, I remember that night coming back and, you know, spending some time crying, you know, remembering my friend. And, you know, going through my history of my friendship with him and going through all the different ups and downs that we went through together. And I felt like I really was able to mourn his death. I felt like I was able to get it out. There was emotion that was in me. And I was happy that I was able to go and be there for him and for his family and for me. And I spent a couple nights kind of tossing and turning in bed and going in and out of tears, you know. So that was one example of mourning. The other one that popped up for me was when I was thinking about my grandfather. My grandfather died about 10 years ago. And I was remembering, I was remembering about him when my grandmother died. So my grandmother died when I was around 13 years old. And she died quite young. She was in her 50s, as was my friend Tony. And it was a very tragic death. she had a very severe form of cancer, and she was the first of her generation to pass. her mother was also there, and you can imagine how hard that was for her. But I specifically remember that my grandfather was completely deadpan. He was totally emotionless. He held a very stoic kind of stance, and I never saw any emotion from him. I was remembering when we came back, because my father at that time was living on the West Coast, and when I was there visiting him, we heard of the passing of my grandmother. So we all came back, and I remember we got to from the airport, we went straight to my grandfather's house, and he opened the door, and my father just jumped into his arms and held him tight. And even then, I remember seeing my grandfather, and I felt like there was something behind the look that I saw in his face. But he still kept very stoic. And I never saw him shed one tear about his wife's death. And then fast forward about 15 to 20 years later, I was visiting him one day at his house, and his bedroom on the top floor of his house, he always locked it. He had a skeleton key that he always have in his pocket when he'd walk around, and he'd always keep it locked. And this one day, we heard something come crashing down from up in his room, and he was quite elderly at that time, and he couldn't really go up and down stairs. So he gave me the key, and I ran up and opened the door, and some mirror or something had come crashing down and broke. But to my surprise, having never really been in his room before, there was directly across the foot of his bed. So if he's lying in bed, this is what he's looking at, is a big picture of my grandmother from their wedding day. And on either side of this picture was a head of Christ and a head of Mary, on either side. So this was another expression of mourning. You know, I felt that this locked room had become kind of a metaphor for his life. You know, he certainly shed some tears, I imagine, but never let anyone else see this. And it'd be kind of a metaphor where he locked it in. He closed it and locked it in, but there was a lot of emotion there, right? So now, I also had, and then another little example was in some work that I had done in therapy some years ago, I'd come to realize that there was parts of my life, parts of my past life, that I had wanted to be different. I wished had been different. And so somewhere in me, from the way that my mechanism was put together as a child, somewhere in me was this kind of hope that I was holding on to, that it would change, that the past would change, in a sense. And so I had to come to terms with the fact that I had to mourn the fact that that was never going to change, and that I had to let go of this hope. So this monk says, "How's it when the morning clothes are not worn?" So I really identify very much with this monk. I feel that, at least for me, behind this question, it's kind of a frustration. Like, how the hell do I get rid of this? In the commentary that's in the Book of Serenity, underneath where it says, "How is it when the morning clothes are worn?" The commentary says, "The cicada has its shell, but still holds to the cold twig." The cicada has shed its shell, but still holds to the cold twig. So I feel there's something in this question about the feeling of not being able to let go of something. And I identified very strongly with this when I read this, because I felt physical holding, like anytime you feel some kind of tension and then you notice it and you let it go. I feel like that's kind of a physical manifestation of still holding to that cold twig. Sometimes it manifests in twitching or rage, anger, sometimes. Things can pop up when we hold on. But I feel that mourning, but then I found it's paradox, because that mourning is also an act of letting go. Like, I felt that my mourning for Tony was a way of letting him go, in a sense. Yet, at the same time, remembering him. He's there, but I'm letting him go. So that's his question. And Kaohsiung says, "Today, Kaohsiung's filial duty is fulfilled." So what does this mean? Filial, which means of or due from a son or daughter, or your family duties, in a sense. So what is Kaohsiung getting at here? Who is a monk in China several hundred years ago, who left his home to live in a monastery. So I feel that he is kind of pointing to that he and all of us are children of the Dharma. And where it's in the book, it says, "Today Kaohsiung's filial duty is fulfilled." Underneath that, the commentary says, "He doesn't turn away from everyday life." So this brought up to me a scene from a movie that that hit me very deeply a while back. It was a movie called Rabbit Hole. And in this movie, the main characters, we find out in the beginning that their young child had been tragically killed by being run over by a car. And the main character's mother, the main character also had a brother that died in his 20s. And so one day, the main character is talking with her mother and kind of asking her about how it was to lose her son. And so she asks, does it ever go away? And she answers, no, it changes though. And so she asks, how? And the mother says, at some point it becomes bearable. It turns into something you can crawl out from under. You carry it around like a brick in your pocket, and you forget about it for a while. And then you reach in for whatever reason, and there it is. Oh, right, that. It's kind of, not that you like it exactly, but it's what you got instead of your son. So you carry it around, and it doesn't go away. Which is fine, actually. So this made me wonder. I feel like the monk has this idea that there's something wrong with wearing these mourning clothes. Maybe you could think about something, mourning clothes that you wear, something that we can't let go of. Do you ever judge yourself for feeling that way? I feel like that was kind of what happened with my grandfather. He couldn't show his mourning clothes. He had it kind of hidden somewhere. And it's something that I've experienced time and time again with things that I hold on to that I'm ashamed of or embarrassed of. So I want to say that that I have no criticism whatsoever of my grandfather. I kind of feel like his locked room and maybe even the child, my little child that was holding on to that hope, was somehow like the brick that the mother from Rabbit Hole spoke about, which is fine, actually. So if mourning is a way of not turning from your everyday life, this monk is stuck more in a place of good, bad, right and wrong. He's stuck with, I should not be wearing these mourning clothes. I feel like that was behind his question. So in the verse, the beginning of the verse for the koan says, the pure household has no neighbors. For long years, staying in sweeping, not admitting any dust. So the household is our body, is our self. And just like in our practice, for long years, we sweep away, we wipe the mirror clean, not admitting any dust. And the next line says, when the light tilts the moon, remaining at dawn. And the commentary for that said, when negativity reaches its limit, positive is born. And that really kind of pierced my heart when I read that, because it was actually something that I felt had hope attached to it. This was maybe a chance, a way of getting out or of letting go. Really letting go. You know, when the light tilts the moon, I thought, Tilting the moon is just shedding a new light. It's changing the quality of the light on everything which is already there, things which are already there. Nothing has changed yet. The next line of the verse says, having freshly fulfilled filial duty, then one meets spring. And when I first read that, tears. It was a breath of fresh air to read that. And yet, the sadness was still there. You know, whatever that was my grandfather was feeling. Whatever it was that I was feeling for Tony. The sadness was there. Is there room for both? Can we wear the mourning clothes, yet still grieve, still feel our sadness? So then the monk asks a very, very sweet question after that. How about after fulfilling filial duty? I find that very sweet. You know, it's like that cicada still holding on to that branch. What is it like to let go of this branch? What is it like? And then the great line, Kaoshan likes to get falling down drunk. So now, I think there is quite a tradition in Japan of drinking, and I think that from what I hear, monks do like to drink, but I'm not sure that that's what he's talking about. There is this, this also just made me remember this tradition in Japan when I was there the first time 25 years ago. That they have this tradition on weekends that the boss of a workplace will go out with his or her workers and get really, really drunk with them on Friday. So the people that work with them can then really just say whatever they want. They can just get it out, curse out the boss, tell them how much they hate them in the workplace, blah, blah, blah. And you'll see these businessmen literally falling down on the corners of Tokyo as they go out with their boss and kind of straighten things out. It also made me think of a great saxophone player named Zoot Sims, who got up to play one night, who was completely drunk, completely wasted. And he played incredibly. And someone came up to him and asked afterwards and said, how can you play so good drunk? And he said, I practice drunk. So, you know, I think it's more about a quality of how a person is when they're falling down drunk. Like, not a care in the world, not thinking about yesterday, not thinking about tomorrow, just kind of in the moment, not concerned with their mistakes, not pretending that they don't have any, but just here I am. Just here I am. I could give a shit, you know. And this really brought up for me, I was remembering the end of the movie Amadeus. And I kind of felt like this, as thinking about it, I felt like this whole movie was kind of an expression of this koan. Because if you haven't seen it, the whole movie is basically Salieri, who was another composer at the time of Mozart, is basically telling a confession. The whole movie is him giving a confession to a priest. He tries to commit suicide in the beginning. And they catch him and save him, and then a priest comes in to talk to him. And so the whole movie is his account of what happened with him and Mozart. And it was like he got it all out. To me, it was like he was wearing those mourning clothes the whole time, and him telling the whole story and finally getting it out and confessing to this priest kind of freed him. And at the end of the movie, you see he has kind of a lightness to him. And it's the priest who was like sitting there like really distraught. And someone comes in to take Salieri out to have his bath or something. And as he's leaving, before he leaves, he taps the father on the shoulder and he goes, "Don't worry, Father, I will speak for you. I speak for all mediocrities in the world. I am their champion. I am their patron saint." And then they wheel him out, and he's in this literal madhouse with like people who are like really extremely mentally ill. And they're wheeling him down the hallway, and he just keeps going, "Mediocrities everywhere. I absolve you. I absolve you. I absolve you." And he ends with this smile on his face. Much like the man falling down drunk who has no concerns. I feel like he was able to let it go. He was able to see exactly who he was. Which I think, in a large part, that's what this koan is about. Can you see exactly who you are without anything blocking it? I am the champion patron saint of all the mediocrities. I love that. He did not turn away from his everyday life. And again, I do not want to put any kind of a negative or a criticizing view on when you do hold it in, or when you do wear the mourning clothes. It's not that it's wrong. It's that we're failing to see ourselves exactly as we are, with all our faults, with all our issues. And there's something kind of freeing about when we actually do that. And I really appreciated Kaohsiung's responses in this koan. It was, I think, a very unique koan. Today, Kaohsiung's filial duty is fulfilled. What does that mean? What does that mean for you? Your filial duty. What is your filial duty? I just want to end with the last line from the verse, which I said to myself over and over again, and it brought a great release, and learned a lot from this koan about who I am. And this last line is, "Walking drunk, singing crazily, turban hanging down, ambling with tousled hair, who cares? In great peace, with no concerns, a man falling down drunk."